Okay, it's time for another Techie Talk with State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy, and Friday, July 17th. Techie, we're still meeting virtually.
Yeah, it's we continue to maintain social distancing, and always pleased to see you. And today is four months, it was last at the State House for work business on the St. Patrick's Day, March. My meeting Ways and Means got canceled at the last second. We're waiting to go see the chairman as part of the budget process, which has now been delayed, obviously, as a result of the pandemic. So it's amazing how long it feels like, what realistically is a short period of time in our lives.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, quarter of the year is completely different than it normally would be. So it stands to reason that we're gonna feel the effects of it, both physically and emotionally, I'm sure, and socially too.
I still haven't been brave enough to get my hair cut. So the ones watching this in video, you have now confirmed the following things: the hair is real, and it really is black because they don't color it. That's a very common question I get. There are some. Straight gray hairs, mind you. There are a few in the well, more than a few, but this is kind of the way you people prove that what your natural hair color is, for better or for worse.
That's so true. But I mean, I guess numbers wise, when it comes to the pandemic, Massachusetts is kind of holding its own, it looks like.
Yeah, the average number is decreased to under 2%, is maintained under 2%, which is what the epidemiologists want to see. You know, obviously Quincy and Weymouth and Braintree and communities adjacent to Boston does have a slightly higher number than some of the rural communities because of geography and the epicenter essentially of the Boston area. But overall, I mean, it's been very well controlled overall. But to give you an example, even a place like Tokyo, which saw a spike of 200 cases in one day, has resulted in a level 4, for example, basically the most severe option for the governor of Tokyo to shut down the city, basically. Mm. They moved to complete shutdown over just 200, but because of how rapidly this disease spreads. So communities, our big cities, communities are looking at numbers of just a few hundred and taking very severe action to try to limit its continuation. So while we're seeing numbers in the area of 200 here, 200 there, we really haven't dipped under 100 yet. But to give people an idea of their very high concern response around the world, while our numbers are still in the hundreds, in the hundred in some places in the world is sufficient to start reversing openings, stopping openings, and in some cases going to be checked out. You see that now in other states, the immunologists, the doctors are taking very swift action on what we would consider small numbers to the size of the population. Again, it's the speed of infection. So the scaredness of this, the fear of all this, is really how fast it moves. So diligence continues to be very important. A state of emergency is still in effect. I remind everybody, state of emergency is still in effect, providing mask wearing, social distancing, number of gatherings, and so forth. And I agree with everybody else, and I said this before, if you want to keep your business open, it's very important for not just business to cooperate with the health standard, but also customers to cooperate. If you feel it's that important to put a business at risk because you don't want to follow the rules of the business and the public health departments, then, I mean, clearly you're not interested in helping people out. And, you know, that's extremely disconcerting.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear just this past week, major retailers like Walmart, CVS, TJ Maxx now mandating face coverings in all of their stores, where here in Massachusetts, that seemed to have kind of become the norm over the past couple of months. I wasn't aware that it wasn't that way in other places.
No, most of the country has not moved to a face mask. Many states has not moved to social distancing in the same strict manner we've done, as well as rules about how stores and restaurants open up. And Florida is the classic example. I mean, they responded extremely slowly. They didn't believe it would exist. They didn't believe it would come. They believed the heat would save them. There was a heat wave moving through the entire Southwest and to the deep South, and the spread of infection in those areas are rising very rapidly. which has already been proven in Southeast Asia and Africa and South America, that the intense heat does not change the disease contagiousness. So, I mean, a lot of folks have this very false impression about this is like a flu-like situation and how the flu has a low infection rate. It does infect you in the summer, don't get me wrong, it does happen. But it has very low infection rate opportunity during the summer months. So you imagine what it's like, you know, in the heat of the summer. You know, fall is only 2 months away from us. I know it's July, and I know August is the most brutal month in Massachusetts, but it is coming up pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And we heard the governor say just the other day that he believes, you know, the face covering requirements will be in effect here for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, right now it's pretty straightforward, as I've been saying for this for literally 4 months now. The mask protects other people from you. The asymptomatic nature of the disease, and you being a carrier with minimal or no symptoms that are obvious, it still allows you to carry it out. And it's a respiratory disease, so anything comes in your mouth and nose can be transmitted to others. That's why you have to wash your hands before you touch anything else, and especially if you put it in your mouth or eyes and your nose. And you know, science have been looking at the fact that, you know, you inhale mostly through your nose. Most of us breathe through our nose. And as a result, you know, it enters your airway through your nasal cavity. So, you know, it gets into your lungs and other parts of your body from there. So yes, it is our number one defense, other than keeping away from other people, to keep your germs to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Some positive news this week on the testing of a potential vaccine, even closer to home at Moderna over in Cambridge. They're moving into human trials pretty soon.
Yeah, we saw that in the news as well. But, you know, even with an FDA expedited process, and the EU and other countries already have these type of processes in place, and the sampling is still very small. They're doing about 75-ish, is all if I correctly. And Oxford University in England already started human trials earlier, and same as Beijing. However, one size doesn't fit all. We're all different people. And a vaccine has a different response to different folks regarding how it works. And that reason we have nearly no real negative impacts on vaccines on people is because of the raw amount of research associated with the vaccine itself. And nowadays, we take into more accountability than we ever have about the different impact on different health issues, different genetic makeups, and so forth. So it is very optimistic that we move forward in a potential solution. However, once again, we don't want the solution to become a danger.
Right, exactly, yeah. What do you make of, you know, efforts at the federal level to kind of change the way the statistics are reported to the CDC?
Yeah, it is somewhat troubling they decided to change a methodology that has been utilized indefinitely to an agency whose job is to deal with pandemics. I mean, it's the Center of Disease Control. It's pretty obvious in the name what the job is. And having that centralized data generally provides coordination. Under this administration, one of the most troubling part about this, like we've seen with FEMA in the past, is lack of ability to coordinate. And without clear signals from the federal level, exactly what the plan is, and to have all states follow a uniform plan, you know, has resulted in what you see today, the inability for containment of disease, the challenge on prioritization of distribution of the stockpile and PPE, and the, you know, in the spread rate as people leave their states or they're in bordering states to do business or you know, whatever they have to. So well, we're a very small state to our borders. If you're a bigger state and you live on a border, but all your essential services are across the border, you're obviously going to be crossing borders, which provides opportunity for the disease to spread to somewhere else. And, you know, now I was on a call with Council of Federal Responsibility, I think, or was it a Council of Federal Diplomacy? I can't remember these councils anymore. Mm-hmm. But I was on a call with 42 other officials, not federal, the county, state, municipal officials, and listen to what's going on there. And there's like real scare going on in some of these places where they repeat they don't have a clear federal guideline. Their governors have not been enforcing things like masks or social distancing or partial closures. And now these local officials, state officials, county officials are trying to figure out what to do on their own, independently. But they all admit it's patchwork, because you do one thing with one community, but the other community next door doesn't do the same thing.
Right.
It doesn't stop the infection rate. So this patchworking is not going to work, especially on the state level.
Yeah, the virus knows no geographical borders, for sure.
It doesn't matter about race or gender or borders. It travels through the air. So I don't know. We've been talking about this forever. I don't know why people don't take it more seriously.
Yeah. Are you getting any clearer picture, Techie, of how the pandemic is impacting the state finances?
No, we still don't have a clear picture. We're looking at somewhere in the $6 billion range still, but we don't know if that's a solid number.
Okay.
To put it in perspective for folks, $6 billion for state tax revenue, somewhere between 15 and 20% of revenue brought in.
Okay.
So the budget, you know, the budget was approximately $450 billion projection at the beginning of the year. People say $6 billion, that's a big number, but it's a bigger number when you look at the fact that tax revenue is approximately $30-35 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, the rest of it is federal reimbursements and fees and things like that. And obviously we're not collecting fees. We've suspended a lot of the fees. We don't get connect because of the pandemic. We've pushed off a lot of the sales tax issues, but the restaurant recovery bill is still in the Senate that has a delay of receipt for sales taxes, which hasn't passed yet. But you know, a lot of things we've done has resulted in a loss of revenue today.
Yep.
But we normally collect. We're still not sure how we're going to handle this.
Okay. Yeah. I know there was wasn't there some debate about the transportation bond bill just recently?
Yeah, we had a couple of different ones. We had a Chapter 9 transportation bond bill, which is money that goes straight to cities and towns for road bridge work. So the state would bond money, basically give that money to municipalities. The Senate proposed $30 million. We proposed $200 million. We're hoping to do some kind of compromise in the middle. The House has adopted a more conservative approach because of the concern about our ability to, basically pay for it, as we're not sure what the revenues are. Debt service is one place that the state does not mess around with. We will pay bond debt.
Okay.
You know, that is a priority because our bond rating is very important to us.
You don't want to go bankrupt, basically, right?
Well, basically, we don't want to get bad bond ratings, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't pay. It's like you don't pay your stuff on time. They're gonna make it more difficult for you to borrow next time.
Right.
So, but I mean, the bigger bond bill, the $18 billion transportation bond bill that the government filed is somewhat a question mark. And the reason is because the House proposal had included a number of provisions to provide a direct revenue stream for that $18 billion, dedicated revenue stream. So, you know, we addressed the debt gas tax, we utilize ride sharing to increase, we looked at the sales tax of car, rental car industry does not pay sales tax on the purchase of their cars. We're looking at that issue. And we're looking at changing the corporate tax rate to be a tiered tax rate based on total revenue generated. Corporate minimum tax is very low. It's under $600 if I remember that. So it'd be a tiered system for the biggest companies to pay more minimum tax. Given the current pandemic, we're not driving, so the gas tax is not relevant. Uber, Lyft, and other ride shares are pretty much on life support at the moment, given the circumstances. Car rental companies are bankrupt, and corporate minimum tax is not going to be enough.
Right.
So I do not have a solution of how to find a dedicated revenue to commit to $18 billion a bond, and I've never seen an $18 billion bond bill in my life.
Really? Okay.
Both in the legislative capacity and when I use the staff. So normally our bond bills float in the area of $5 billion, maybe 10 on the outside, but never 18 billion one city.
Carry that out over what, 100 years to pay it back?
Well, generally we do paybacks around 10 years.
Yeah.
20 if we refinance.
Okay.
The treasurer will refinance on her own with ANF. Because the two of them together will make a decision with my answer.
Yeah.
But I mean, even then, the authorization is for a short period. So when we issue bond bills, the governor only has so many years to issue those bonds.
I see.
And it comes back to us for review, which is a good practice because we don't want the governor to just kind of bond it all out and then you know, we have a chance to come back and review the bonding process. And we do a bond cap. The state doesn't bond more than $2.1 billion a year. It's in that zone. So we're not this kind of deficit spending federal government. And the bond money doesn't pay for operation. It pays for actual capital improvements, things you see in terms of, you know, fixing roads.
Yep. Curious to get your take, Tacky, on the plans to go for kids to go back to school in the fall, and you know, the state education department asking school systems to present three different scenarios in August. What's your feeling about that?
We had a briefing with early ed this week, and the challenge here is time. So while early ed is giving a lot of time in many ways to districts to provide information to them, and they have committed to a very quick turnaround, it isn't a lot of time because you're going to open schools after Labor Day, and some schools open before Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Submit a report by mid-August. That's a lot of school districts, not just municipal, but also regional school districts as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of documentation review. And the governor's office is relying heavily on pediatricians regarding how to open schools. And so far, the science shows that children have a low infection rate. They do get infected, but it's a low infection rate. And they think, perhaps, that the children to adult transmission isn't as high as they think. But the challenge, again, is that we're trying to navigate this entire world with science on the go. We're learning that science as we go, as new research comes up. You know, we're trying to constantly keep adjusting. And that's why he says, like, well, 3 feet is better than six feet, not better, but 3 feet is acceptable.
Right. Yeah.
Or 6 feet in the classroom, based on the information we have today.
Yeah. There's always that asterisk, like, you know, until further notice, or based on what we know now, you know.
Yeah, the world is all conducting studies. And what you see in the news is a tiny fraction of the volume of research globally that's going on.
Yeah.
Thanks to modern technology, sharing information among scientists is faster than ever.
Do you think you know, parents should have the option basically to keep their kids home and learn online if necessary?
I would think that would make a lot of sense, but it does create other barriers. So currently, one of the challenges of the new proposal is they're going to need more staff in schools,
right,
just to on class assistance, social distancing, managing children, and so forth. And to have an online class with a separate teacher just for online class to engage in that interaction would be needed. If you try to do online class with kids in the room, then how do you get that child that's on virtual sufficient attention,
mm-hmm,
to try to manage a classroom kids in it simultaneously?
Yep.
That becomes a real question of manpower issue associated with that. And how do you keep up with, you know, let's say you have a question and then video, there's 10 kids in video and 10 kids in person. You know, you got to be able to operate technology while managing the classroom.
Yep.
And you got to keep your eye on the kids because, you know, social interaction is very important to children. I know. And a lot of kids are well behaved, but they're still children and need to engage in regular contact with each other. It's important social skill. And even with mask wearing, trying to keep the kids wearing their mask and whatnot, requires a degree of attention by the people.
Yeah.
And let's be honest about this, okay? I mean, I've been wearing my mask. Some people have been seeing me walks and maybe with the mask on and all kinds of weather. It gets hard after hour two.
Yep.
It does. And if you're like 8 years old, This is going to be hard.
Yeah, there's no question. That's a challenge. And for, you know, maybe kids with some special needs or learning disabilities, it's even more challenging.
Yeah, and some kids are, you're right. And there's also immune compromise, right?
Yep.
Children will get sick. Some kids will have illnesses just like adults.
Yep.
And, you know, returning to school, in the case of adults, to workplaces where you can potentially be infected, and you'd be a very young person, mm-hmm, compromising, when people get cancer and, you know, congenital heart disease and asthma and many other issues. That has to be taken into very serious consideration as,
yep,
children, as much as we do with adults.
Can we talk about the big white elephant in the room, Tacky, that we're dancing around, the police reform bill?
Yeah, this is, we talked about this a couple of times already on the podcast and the complexity of the matter. You know, we're well past 150 constituents looking for some police reform, and right now I'm also approaching 75 plus and growing regarding concerns about the bill the Senate passed. And the House was taking email testimony up to 11 a.m. this morning. So it's closing on new time with you now, so the door's closing that email. But, you know, the arguments, you know, it only affects police, but it does address a slippery slope for all of us. As we talked about earlier, if you crack open a door on a cold day, the whole house does get cold. And it becomes a larger issue, not necessarily about police officers. I'm talking about preface this conversation. That it's not about just police officers, but it's about civil recovery against government. Mm-hmm. How should it be easier? Should there be a different standard by which people who feel they've been harmed by the government receive financial recovery from the government? And qualified immunity addresses this, not just on the individual person being sued, but also on the government being sued, and by which way process it is. And what about qualified immunity? Indemnification, which limits how much you can recover against the government, as well as collective bargaining that has provisions in there regarding qualified immunity and indemnification and recovery, what the recovery limits are. In the collective bargaining is also in place. So there's a lot of different moving parts associated with this thing, which I think is very much oversimplified. And I've heard from multiple lawyers and advocates regarding what qualified immunity is, and no one can give an answer because there's very little case law on the current law, much less trying to create a new law within the standard. And why I say that's challenging, because if we don't even fully understand how it works under current case law, even making brand new law, we don't even have a reference point for the current system. And qualified immunity, it's not just about individual lawsuits against persons, it's actually suing the city or town as well.
Yep.
And does, and I will not lie to you, it does make it difficult for people to sue a municipality. That is accurate.
But it doesn't preclude civil suits, right?
It includes civil suits. So you've been, let's take a much more mundane example. Let's say you have your fence plowed over by a DPW or snow removal. It doesn't happen once. It's a continuous behavior from the same driver. And the question is the driver intentionally hurting your property, accidentally hurting your property? And if so, regardless of either scenario, do you have a right to recovery by your property? And the city says, we're not going to pay for it. You sue the city. And then it becomes an issue. Do you sue the individual driver? Or do you, you sue the city? But if you sue the driver, this driver's working in its official capacity under the instructions of the city. Mm-hmm. So driver gives the lawsuit to the city. Then you would try to get recovery. Then the city would think qualified immunity that was done in its official capacity, not outside its capacity as a whole of malice or targeted racism or targeted behavior. Even then, we targeted behavior with the affirmative defense saying that it was like in our capacity, there was no bias in our action. Yep. The plaintiff to try to determine the qualified immunity doesn't apply because it doesn't rise to this very little case law standard.
I see.
So even with changing qualified immunity of police officers to change the reasonable standard regarding bodily harm, which is what I've been told, which I still don't know what that means, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Don't know what that means in terms of how it impacts collective bargaining, current statute, processes of cities and towns. It's a lot of question marks. And it won't result, and it's very, still like I said, it's qualified immunity is not being taken away. It's just that the entry point is different on the affirmative defense. And the entry point is different, but the affirmative defense doesn't change.
If that officer in question is terminated, then it is no longer an employee of that municipality, then that opens them up to a civil suit, yes?
Should it, because it's the time of act.
Okay.
So same thing in corporations, right? It's not identical, but corporations have a thing called a corporate shield. As an attorney, I tell everybody the same thing starting a business, form a corporation. Response is, I don't want to pay extra taxes. Mm-hmm. Well, corporation, if you're working in official capacity as an employee of the corporation, like you're working at QATV as a not-for-profit corporation, and you're doing an efficient job and something happens and causes injury, then I would sue you, but you give the document to your boss, who then contacts your insurance company to play the fence on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't in the official capacity, they could sue you individually.
I see. Okay. Boy, there are a lot of moving parts. What are you hearing in the House as to moving forward on this bill?
The schedule for caucus on Monday and the schedule to go to debate Wednesday, Thursday, and perhaps Friday, or perhaps even longer. Unlike the Senate, which was operating on some limited capacity of people in the chamber, we are still operating on remote communication by telephone, which means that there are even less people in the chamber, probably not even 20, probably even lower than that number, because I can't see the chamber clearly from the webcam and obviously we can use telephone audio,
right,
because it's more real time. But, you know, that's actually going to be very debate challenging. So we're going to need more time in the House than the Senate did, even though they pulled an all-nighter. Given the nature of how we're operating, it's extremely challenging. And people have observed over the years that the House tries to do consensus prior to debate, meaning trying to get people to work out agreements regarding the various amendments, as opposed to just cramming it as part of a debate session before, which is also extremely time-consuming. So I have no idea how this is going to work out. If there's an attempt to change the rules on amendments, meaning we do a special rule just for this one bill on when amendments due, you know, that'll be tried to be done in an informal session where any one person can reject. They try to do this today, Monday, on informal session. I'm very curious if those rules are approved without objection.
Do you think the state flag should be changed, Tacky?
Well, the state flag is actually kind of misrepresented sometimes, I think. I mean, it's kind of because people just take things on the surface and make assumptions, right? Every part of the flag has a different symbol. So Native Americans is very key to the survival of people in Massachusetts. Massasoit out of Quincy, which is this Massasoit tribe that was in Quincy, was crucial for people who came from Europe to survive in the new colonies for the first time. The star, there's a star there. Don't forget it's a star there. It's a directional star. So, you know, north, it points north, and because we're in the northern hemisphere, and, you know, provides guidance where we're going. The sword is representation of our revolution. You know, it's a state that modeled, because I can't ever remember the model correctly translated from Latin. You know, it's basically, you know, we try to resolve things by laws, but we take up arms to protect our liberties, which is a revolutionary term. So the sword is actually a reflection of the American Revolution.
Hmm.
So people have, because of the positioning of the various symbols, you know, it's gives misinterpretation of what each symbol represents.
Right.
So, you know, if they want to move some of the symbols around, you know, that could be possible. But it shows somewhat of a lack of education about the flag. So the state website has this stuff up regarding the history of the flag symbols through the Secretary of State's office. Obviously, I'm trying to do this from memory. Very exhausted this couple of weeks, so I still could be wrong. I'm sure somebody's going to email me and tell me that I didn't get it correct. But, you know, the symbols are on everybody's flags of their name. It's in the three hills on Manning Hills. That's one of those three hills on Quincy. It's mm-hmm. Manning, actually on the work. It's on the flag as part of it.
Yep.
So we have three dates, the original founding, the incorporation of a town, and the incorporation of a city. All cities and towns have different symbols. So I think a lot of the stuff revolves around we need to be educated, truly educated about what the flags represent and why they're historically important to us.
Can we end as we'd like to do with the update on the census?
Yeah, the census has continued to improve as we go along. Nationally, at 62.1%. Massachusetts continues ahead of the national trend at 64.1%. But Quincy is still behind the state average at 63%. So it's ticked up about 0.1% from last week, which is a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
Braintree is still very strong at 74.6%. Randolph at 65.2%. Weymouth at 70.4%. And our neighbors in Milton at 78.7%. So relative to our neighbors, we're still behind. We are a bigger city, but it's important for us to get to the number because of 100,000 people it changes our federal HUD code. So it is crucial every week it's been a census. It will continue to October. The U.S. Census is looking for people who would like to work with them on tracking people to align the federal census. It is on multiple languages on the website at 2020census.gov. If you'd like to do it by telephone, the phone number is also on the website, and you'll be contacted by the U.S. Census, summer workers. But again, we'll never ask for financial information. We're never going to ask for personal data. We'll never ask for money. We'll never ask for gift cards. So this is purely an assistance on filling out the forms. And if you're not sure, call the office, 617-722-1494. You can call also the senator or the congressman to help with some verification, because we always help you make sure that that works. And if you prefer some assistance online, you can obviously help that as well as all the other social service agencies.
I think you gave out Senator Keenan's number again.
Oh, yeah, I did. 1494 is the Senate. Yeah. It's been a long pandemic. 722-2014.
Yes, although I'm sure the Senate can help you as well.
Well, John, you need more work. We're just going to send my constituents your way at this point. I think I've said a couple of times in one book podcast, this is weeks feeling like months.
Yeah, I know.
It is a lot of mental strain. I think I hope some people who are listening to this realize that this work follows us all over the place, and it does wear on us mentally. And it's not obviously police reforms on the forefront, but I'm getting things regarding evictions because the eviction moratorium is somewhat coming to end. The $600 on your extra unemployment is ending in July,
right?
Which will impact your ability to pay rent and other supplies. Getting people back to work is essential because of the loss of the $600. I know the phase for opening is causing a lot of stress with everybody. I'm stressed out too. And then, climate change is on the table somewhere. Lots of people looking at the federal changes regarding DACA and how it impacts us, and people advocating for that. We have the feds pull back on the whole international visa student issue, the student visas because of the pandemic. There's a lot of, even though it's a state, a federal issue, because we're a high education state, we have a lot of pressure at our level on that.
Right.
I'm getting a continuation of issues even on marijuana regarding, obviously not just open marijuana, but regarding laws being installed about technical corrections in the industry. A lot of stuff regarding sponging of records and things like that. And of course, now we're getting things on infrastructure issues and transportation bond reforms that let's see something happen on expanding infrastructure. And of course, school funding.
Yep.
We talked about this earlier. We're getting light emails on school funding, and also the disability communities been preparing a large conversation regarding disability funding as part of the budget, which is in crisis. So, yes, it's been very busy as we're trying to learn one issue and get a small sample of what else is coming.
Oh, and by the way, it's an election year, too, just to throw that in.
September 1st primary, participation by mail-in ballot. The forms we should hopefully be reaching mailboxes soon. You can get it online at the city clerk's office, or you can call for one at the city clerk's office.
Yep.
We have PDFs as well. We can email them to you from my office. I can print them on my computer and walk them to the mailbox if I have to for folks. I mean, I will do that. I'll just walk it to the post. I'll print it off myself. If you feel you would like to get that form in advance, obviously a system that's available online, even if you feel you get it. But September 1st primary, early voting is available for that, as well as we're going to be doing this in November.
All right. Catch up again with you, I guess, one more time, Jackie, before the session ends.
Well, just because it ends doesn't mean I stop working.
That's true. But I might for a little while.
But the rest of my recovery bill is still floating in the Senate, so that might have to be taken up in informal sessions.
Okay.
So there is a number of bills that will probably still work in August, informal session. My committee itself, as a chair, I found interesting about continuation meetings and special speakers throughout the month of August and perhaps move into the fall. And trying to figure out scheduling, we'll find the membership that works for all of them. I know that some people taking day trips and taking short trips to the Cape and to the beach and short trips around. I am not doing any of that. So you know, which is not good. It's not healthy. I understand. But I, still personal issues regarding
sure
the public.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. And I'd like to close by congratulating the Quincy High School and El Quincy High School graduates. They're going to have their in-person ceremony next week. So I know it's been a trying year for a lot of college students, high school students, elementary, middle school, and challenging for all families. And, you know, it's not their fault this has happened. Absolutely not. But, you know, I wish them all well on their endeavors, no matter what they do, if they're going to college or they won't go to Gold Tech or the bank, thank you very much if you're going to go into the military or maybe if they take a year off.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, whatever you all choose to do next, you know, I just wish you the best and the best wishes for all.
Yeah, and folks will be able to watch those ceremonies live right here on QAE TV because, of course, it's limited attendance this year. So we're going to bring it to folks in their homes.
Yes, I've chosen not to attend again because I have my mom to care for, and I mm-hmm. take extraordinarily high caution and low risk tolerance.
Sure.
But, you know, I wish I could be there, but, you know, I think everybody needs to make personal decisions for the well-being of themselves.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll see this message from you, and we'll sure be touch base with them again next week.
All right, talk to you next week, and you enjoy the weekend. It's going to be a hot one.
Thanks, Jackie. Be well.
Be well.